what Biden just approving, cluster bombs. So talk about what that means. And if they say that they won't let Ukraine join until after the war, doesn't that push Putin to continue the war?
Well, I do think that President Biden is deeply concerned about looking like it looks like the United States is at war with Russia, which on some days it does. I mean, it's a proxy war. So there's you also have not only the principles I mentioned earlier, Amy, which really do not permit Ukraine to join under NATO's own principles, but you have something called Article 5, which is an attack on one NATO country is, you know, everyone mobilizes. And I think President Biden is aware of that. So, you know, it's a bind, but there are, you know, they are probably hammering out, as Juan alluded to, this idea that it would be akin to security guarantees offered to Israel. I don't know what that means. I don't know if they know what that means, but they're hammering out something for a face-saving presentation at the end of the summit or tomorrow when Zelensky meets with Biden. But I, you know, it's going to be a long way, I think, for Ukraine. I may be wrong. There may be fast track. In addition, if I could just say another thing that's emerged is you do have some signs, small signs, that in Congress you've had 19 representatives led by Barbara Lee and Ilhan Omar and Sarah Jacobs issuing a resolution, not protesting the war as much as the cluster bombs, but it's a sign of life in the body politic, of some awareness of how grinding and possibly insecurity producing this war is. And I think that's an important signal, and one that the administration may not wish to pay attention to, but I think needs to as we enter the election season.
Katrina Vandenhoeven, I want to thank you for being with us, publisher of The Nation magazine, columnist for The Washington Post, and we'll link to your piece in The Guardian. That piece headline, "Now is not the time for Ukraine to join NATO." Next up, as the heat dome in Texas arrives, where migrants at the border face deadly conditions, and the Republican governor of Texas, Abbott, has just signed a law that went into effect eliminating water breaks for construction workers in Texas. Stay with us. از کف میایم به راس هرم میزنیم شو میکنیم ببین چقدر دیدنی 44 سالتون سال شکست فجی اون روز همه داره سهم میپرید از کف میایم به راس هرم میزنیم شو میکنیم ببین چقدر دیدنی 44 سالتون سال شکست فجی اون روز همه داره سهم میپرید بگوام من فالگیرم تو قهوه نظام سار دیدم یه شیر داشت شغال شکار میکرد تو روز بود تعبیر خواب نی نه قهوه زدم براتون فنی باید تحمل کنید تلخیش همین اول کار شدیم تشبیه به فنجونه که تونل بکی چپ میشه میره شیرش مثل ما یکم سب کن نیت که کردی حالا بزن انگشت گوشه یه میزن بذاریم برق و لازم میشه وقتی بشنوی همشو یه سخت میبینم وسط فال هم گارد ویژه هم طلب هان یه دسته با کت شلوار کروات یه وصله به اختلاس یه وصله به ران از لابیای اون بر آب روزنامه نگار و خبرنگار تا هنرمندای جیره بگیر با دادگاه شدن طرف حساب از بسیج بگیر تا اطلاعاتی از پایین بگیر و برس بالایی همه دارن میکنن تقلا قوقای شده مثل کارایی که آغازادار میکرد جدا رو اسمشون جا آقا حروم میکوبید By the Iranian rapper Tamaz Salehi. On Monday, a court in Iran sentenced Salehi to 6 years and 3 months in prison for joining anti-government protests last year. Salehi had been facing a possible death sentence. He was prosecuted over lyrics and widely circulated songs and music videos that criticized Iran's government following the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini in police custody after she was arrested for not wearing her hijab properly. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to the massive heat dome that is descending on southern United States this week. Could be one of the worst in the region's history, breaking records for intensity and longevity and impacting some 50 million people in Florida, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Southern California, and Nevada. Heat domes are a key part of heat waves, have become hotter and longer due to climate change. Heat is now the leading cause of weather-related death in the United States. In a minute, we'll look at the heat's impact on workers and prisoners in Texas, which just banned mandatory water breaks But we begin along the southwest border, where more than 100 migrants have already died from heat this year. Last week alone, the Border Patrol officials reported 13 deaths and 226 rescues for dehydration and other heat-related causes. Democracy Now! Spoke to Humane Borders board member volunteer Lori Cantillo about the group's work to maintain water stations for migrants crossing the Sonoran Desert and Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument along the Arizona and Mexico border.
And many of these people are crossing without any idea what lies ahead, how inhospitable the conditions are. There's no shade. Oftentimes, they're traveling with no water, no food, no hats. There's small children with them. I observed on my last water run a woman who was carrying a 3 to 4 month old infant on her back. So, you know, these are just really harsh conditions, and I'm very concerned about the toll that it's going to take on human health.
This comes as thousands of migrants are languishing in camps that often have no running water as they struggle to book appointments to enter the United States through a new government smartphone app. And Texas has started to install what it calls a floating barrier on the Rio Grande that has raised concern about drowning risks for people crossing the river. For more, we go to South Texas, where the heat indexes could reach 115 degrees Fahrenheit this week. We're joined in Falfurrias by Eddie Canales, director of the South Texas Human Rights Center. Eddie, welcome back to Democracy Now! Under terrible circumstances. Explain what this heat wave and U.S. policy and Texas policy means for migrants when it comes to access to water and life itself.
Well, thank you for having me on, explaining the extreme heat that has been around already here for close to a month in terms of heat index reaching 115 to 120 degrees. We, the center provides water, you know, in terms of for the last 9 years, 10 years, we have provided water stations. It's a guessing game in terms of where we can provide the water stations for migrants that are coming through. This year in Brooks County, there has been a 22 confirmed deaths in terms of recoveries of human remains and bodies. And we're dealing with this, the climate change. And this is an example in terms of the extreme heat that we're facing here in South Texas. We people are having to deal with that aspect of it. And we have access in some of the ranches in Brooks County. We have been very gracious in allowing some of the ranches to provide some of the water. But the other day we encountered a situation in one of the surrounding counties where we had placed some water stations along a route there that's right out one of the counties that is surrounding next to Brooks County. And 12 of those water stations were missing, were gone. And we had just within the last couple of weeks, we had checked those water stations. And they were fine. They've been there for close to 9 years. And we checked with the Texas Department of Transportation. They had nothing to do with the removal of those water stations. So we're investigating the fact that other, in that county, ranchers have previously taken water stations that we've had, present. And we're just dealing and continuing our investigation regarding, you know, why would you want to remove water stations that are life-saving for people? And I think it represents the sentiment that is being prevails here in the state of Texas by the governor in terms of doubling up on a lot of the enforcement and spending a lot of the state funds to try to deter people from coming. That's not the case. There's no deterrence. Migration is not going to be stopped in any time soon. So we need to deal with that situation in a more compassionate and a more, economic sense. That what makes economics, people are coming here to work. People are coming here to go to the big cities and do some of the work that is not being done by anybody else. So what process do we have beyond an enforcement only approach? Placing a buoy, and I think that extends out to some of the ranchers in that area, in the Jim Hogg area in terms of where, why the water stations would be removed, you know, and not, and why construction workers can take a break in this heat. So it's a reality that we have. We need to, the extreme heat is having an effect. Migrant deaths is continue to happen until we have a policy that makes sense to, in terms of receiving workers that are coming through, essential workers that are coming through to provide and contribute to this, this economy in this country. And also at the same time, you know, deal with the lack of human rights from their, from their home country.
And Eddie Gonzalez, could you talk about this this new initiative of Governor Greg Abbott to put a floating barrier in the Rio Grande to prevent people from coming through?
Well, we just had, I mean, over the last past year, there has been a lot of, in the Eagle Pass, Piedras Negras area, there has been a lot of drownings. And so I don't know how effective. It's just still an enforcement-only approach. And none of the efforts that Governor Abbott has really undertaken have been effective to any degree. The buoy is 1,000 feet long. I just don't see how that's going to deter people. They're just going to move to a more different area, more dangerous area in terms of trying to get through. The process right now has slowed down considerably in terms of 50% less apprehensions at the border. So, but still, people are still coming through undetected or uninspected in that regards. Yesterday, we received 12 calls out of the center here, and 12 of those calls, only one of them had used the CBP-1 form, and the other 11 people, families, we had to, were reporting that, you know, those people are missing. Those people have disappeared. So the issue is still the broken system. The only approach is an enforcement-only approach, and then that sentiment goes all the way into the ranchers, some of the ranchers, and we're still following up in terms of our investigation in terms of what happened. Some were still present on that trail that we have, but at least 12 of those water stations were missing. So I don't see the enforcement efforts by the state, the governor, having any effect whatsoever right now on deterring anybody.
Well, we're going to continue to look at the governor's policies. Eddie Canales, thanks so much for being with us, director of the South Texas Human Rights Center. We're going to stay in Texas to look at the impact of the massive heat dome and extreme heat on Texas workers and prisoners. News reports show at least 3 people have died after working in triple-digit heat. A post office worker in Dallas, a utility lineman in East Texas, and a construction worker in Houston. This comes as the Republican Governor Greg Abbott just signed into law, a law that went into effect July 1st, that overrides local ordinances that require mandatory water breaks for workers. Meanwhile, during record heat in June, news reports show 32 people died in Texas prisons, most of which lack air conditioning. None were officially attributed to heat, but they included prisoners in their 30s who died from heart attacks or cardiac arrest in the uncooled prisons as temperatures soared into the triple digits. From where we go to Dallas, where we're joined by the Texas Observer's special investigative correspondent, Stephen Monticelli, whose recent piece is headlined, "Texans Die from Heat After Governor Bans Mandatory Water Breaks." Why don't, Stephen, we start right there? Talk about the law that now bans water breaks.
So, the ban on water breaks is a part of a larger bill, HB 2127, otherwise known as the Death Star, which it has been dubbed by critics for its capacity to effectively zap any local legislation that is preempted by the bill. The bill preempts local legislation in 8 different areas, including labor. And specifically, the bill did mention worker breaks as being subject to this preemption. Now, to be clear, the bill does not actually go into effect until September 1st. But we have already seen a shocking number of deaths amid the record heat wave. The three that you mentioned, there is at least 11 in a county in Texas where a lot of people did not have air conditioning, and two individuals, a stepfather and his stepson, at a national park. The heat is oppressive and deadly. And Texas has a history of more workers dying on the job due to heat-related illness than pretty much any other state. And so as this bill, you know, as we approach the date for its coming into effect, a lot of local communities are concerned that the breaks that have been won through passage of legislation in Austin and Dallas, two more liberal cities in the state, those will be rolled back if a lawsuit that's been filed does not put a stay on the bill.
And could you talk about who are the workers largely affected by this legislation, especially in the cities that you mentioned?
Yes. So you had mentioned, Amy had mentioned, construction workers being a group of folks that would no longer get these mandatory water breaks. The mandatory water break legislation that was passed in cities like Austin and Dallas and being considered in cities like San Antonio prior to the passage of the Death Star bill effectively forced employers who have workers outside to give them water breaks. And these water breaks had to be mandatory. It was not sort of a discretionary thing that had to be put in place. And the first of these was passed in 2010 in Austin and in Dallas in 2015. And over the period of time since, we've seen a dramatic reduction in workplace-related heat illness and heat death. Workplace-related heat illness dropped by 78% since 2011. And workplace-related deaths due to heat dropped by half. So, you know, workers such as construction workers, yard workers, post office workers, utility line workers, anyone who has to spend a significant portion of their time outside to get their job done will be impacted by this.
Well, Stephen, before we go, we want to ask you about prisoners. What's happening when the heat soars in these prisons that are largely not air-conditioned?
Well, they effectively turn into ovens. You know, these concrete structures where there is no air conditioning in many of them across the state, they are cooking prisoners alive. There have been many days in which it is 90 degrees at 3 in the morning. There's very little reprieve for the people who have to sit in these prison cells and face this heat. And the reality is the vast majority of them have not been given death sentences. And, you know, the treatment that they're facing is, frankly, inhumane.
And the numbers, news reports show 32 people died in Texas prisons.
Yes. Yes, 32. And Texas prisons are notoriously, they don't like to give up the records. They're notoriously stingy with the records that they give up. So the exact cause of death for all of these prisoners is as yet unknown and still being investigated. But I think a very likely contributing cause would be hyperthermia.
Stephen Monticelli, I want to thank you for being with us, special investigative correspondent at the Texas Observer. We'll link to your piece, Texans Die from Heat After Governor Bans Mandatory Water Breaks. Next up, we'll speak with a TV meteorologist who resigned his job after receiving a death threat over his reporting on the climate emergency in Iowa. Back in 30 seconds. You're going to need somebody on your bond, performed by Buffalo Nichols. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we end today's show with a TV meteorologist in Iowa who resigned his job after receiving a series of death threats and harassing messages over his coverage of the climate crisis. This is how Chris Gloninger, chief meteorologist for the CBS affiliate CCI-TV in Des Moines, Iowa, signed off Friday after his final broadcast.
I'm walking away from a career, an 18-year career in television that I dreamed of since second grade, so that's why I'm a little emotional. And I can't thank KCCI enough for the opportunity to become chief meteorologist. I'm not giving up. I'm just reinventing myself, finding ways that I can make a bigger difference with climate change, more important than ever as the Earth recorded three of its warmest days, now four of its warmest days this week.
That was Chris Gloninger Friday. This is a clip from one of his recent broadcasts for KCCI-TV in which he connected the dots between the Canadian wildfires and the climate crisis.
As the planet warms, a lot of these fires are gaining steam and seeing explosive growth because of the warming planet. And we are paying the price in the form of poor air quality across the state. And if we look back at the month of May, globally, it was the third warmest on record, the warmest ocean water temperatures that we have seen on record. And at this point, already an 89% chance that 2023 will be not just a top 10, but a top five warmest on record. Big signals, concerning trends.
So for more, we're joined now from Falmouth, Massachusetts by Chris Gloninger. He's resigned his job as KCCI-TV chief meteorologist in Des Moines, Iowa, and started a new position as a senior climate scientist at the Woods Hole Group. So, Chris, take us back to the beginning. You started the country's first weekly series on climate change when you were in Boston. But then why did you go to Iowa, which is so important, even in determining the president of the United States, but to be the chief meteorologist? And what happened to you when you started your reports?
Amy, as cheesy as this sounds, we wanted to make a difference. My wife and I have no connection to Iowa, no family, no friends there going into the move. We truly made the move because I thought I could fill a void where no one was talking about climate change. And station management saw that need as well. And I commend them for bringing me on board to do that. And it was a big leap of faith going from Boston, where it tended to be a preaching to the choir, right into the lion's den. And when you heard me connecting the dots, it wasn't anything outrageous. Iowa is powered 65% by wind, right? So that is true renewable energy independence. Farmers get a good amount of money for land leases for those wind turbines. 11% of the GDP is agriculture-based. And you would think, being at the mercy of Mother Nature, that a lot more people would care about the climate crisis.
Well, could you talk about the reaction that you got and the emails and the people threats, people showing up at your house?
You, Ron, it caught me off guard. My wife was running errands. I had come back from a haircut, and I read this email, and it said, "What's your address? Us conservative Iowans want to give you a welcome that you'll always remember." Kind of what the blank tried to do to Justice Kavanaugh. And police, when they read that, said, this is more than just an email that states, I'm going to come and kill you. It was deliberate. It had essentially a plan on how this person would carry it out. Now, he was arrested for harassment in the third degree, $150 fine in Iowa. And I think what's most concerning in all of this is, yes, the threat was made, but in my position as meteorologist, a chief meteorologist in a major severe weather market in the United States, it's a high-profile job. And not a single remark from Republican leadership in that state condemning what was said. And this was something that was widely reported on when it happened last year and again during my resignation.
Chris Gloninger, last July, you shared the series of disturbing emails that you got regarding your coverage. One message said, quote, science like Fauci, you dumb son of a bleep. Go east and drown from the ice cap melting, dumb bleep. That message referring to President Biden's former chief medical advisor, Anthony Fauci. Another message said, what's your home address? We conservative Iowans would like to give you an Iowan welcome you will never forget. If you can talk about the response of your network. You were thanking them at the end of your final broadcast, but why you felt you had to leave, and how much support did you get?
Tremendous support. And Amy, what's funny is if you notice that first email, if you find humor in it, he acknowledges that the ice caps are warming. So anyway, but yes, when I received the series of obsessive emails, it started the ball rolling with conversations between my wife and I. What is next for us? I went to therapy every single week for a year following this event, and it took a lot of soul searching and reflecting on what do we do next, and ultimately was to retool and reinvent myself in my career. I have always been engaged in what I do. I made it into a top 10 market in Boston, Massachusetts, and I was finding myself at a loss for words, filling my weathercast with ums and uhs, and it just wasn't me. And my station supported it. Again, I commend them for making the effort to talk about climate change in an area where it hadn't been talked about before. But, you know, meteorologists need to be doing this more, not less. So I encourage my colleagues to keep going and find a place to make the connections.
Colleagues, the meteorological community is a small one. Have you heard of similar experiences from other colleagues of yours in other stations and cities?
There are a ton of negative emails. There isn't the number of death threats. There haven't been a lot of death threats made against my colleagues. We all receive the same a number of emails that push back against our coverage. And it's that 11%, according to the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication and George Mason University, that are dismissive. But you're far more likely to write in when you don't approve of something that is happening. And I get that. And they're the loud minority. But a lot of what they're giving us in return is photoshopped graphs, poorly at that, poorly done at that. And they're quoting self-proclaimed experts that say that they are an expert in climate change. But in reality, they have no background in the subject matter, but yet they're getting hundreds of retweets because it follows their ideology. It would be like asking an airline pilot and talking to them about your cholesterol because your cardiologist said you have high cholesterol, but you're trusting the judgment of a pilot. The logic blows my mind that I can have an 8-year college background between my undergraduate degree and master's degree, but this person, the self-proclaimed person, holds more weight because, again, it follows their beliefs and ideology and not the science and data.
And, of course, Chris, you're not the only one. In 2006, Dr. Heidi Cullen of the Weather Channel urged other TV forecasters to address climate change in their reporting. She was met with criticism, a lot of it sexist. She later went on to write on her Weather Channel blog, if a meteorologist can't speak to the fundamental science of climate change, then maybe the AMS, the American Meteorological Society, shouldn't give them a seal of approval. If a meteorologist has an AMS seal of approval, which is used to confer legitimacy to TV meteorologists, then meteorologists have a responsibility to truly educate themselves on the science of global warming. We just have a minute left, Chris. What is your recommendation, both for Iowa, which often can help to determine the president of the United States, the Republican presidential candidates are traipsing through right now, to meteorologists, what they need to say?
First of all, Bob Inglis, Republican congressman from the Carolinas, ran on climate, lost, unfortunately, but works with colleagues to help Republicans understand the impacts of climate change. That is important. To my meteorology colleagues, if you're talking about an earthquake, if you're talking about a volcanic eruption or a meteor shower, you can talk about climate change. Our core curriculum matches more with climate than it does with astronomy, geology, and geography. And if you're okay talking about those three, then you have every reason to be connecting the dots between climate change. And as Heidi mentioned in that statement, make sure you're up on the latest research. It is part of your job. We should always be learning.
Chris Gloninger, we want to thank you for being with us. Was the chief meteorologist for the CBS affiliate in Des Moines, Iowa, KCCI-TV, resigned Friday after receiving a series of death threats and harassing messages as he covered the climate crisis. Now a senior climate scientist at the Woods Hole Group, speaking to us from Falmouth, Massachusetts. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Are you interested in radio, community-based media? You can join CJSF 90.1. We're a volunteer-run community radio station, and we always have space for new volunteers to become programmers, review music, edit audio, and so much more. All the training is provided, and anyone can join. To volunteer, email our volunteer coordinator, Noel, at vol_4_CJSF@sfu.ca. Again, that's vol_4_CJSF@sfu.ca. Or you can visit our website, cjsf.ca. It's CJSF 90.1. Diverse, independent, and yours.